Welcome to the Farming on Purpose podcast, a podcast for farmers and ranchers ready to shift for a stronger future. Today's challenges in agriculture are new, but the grit and determination required to be successful are not. On the Farming on Purpose podcast, you'll hear how producers of all sizes and practices are moving mountains for things they believe in, all in the name of an industry that keeps growing and innovating for a stronger food system and stronger farm families. I'm your host, Lexi Wright, and I'm excited to discuss where producers are finding success, challenging the status quo, striving for better, and keeping our heritage alive, all while producing the food we depend on.
Welcome back to Farming on Purpose. I am super excited today because we have a unique guest on the show. A lot of times we talk about farming and ranching practices, business mindset, and ownership. And today we're here to talk about trying to figure out if stock dogs might be a good fit for your operation. That's something that some of our listeners have expressed a unique interest in. So we wanted to be sure we got an expert on to talk about that. So I have Randall here today. And Randall, I want to make sure I pronounce your name, your business's name correctly. So would you tell us a little bit more about you and how you got into stock dogs and what you do?
Yeah. All right. Randall Walker with Sada Stock Dogs. We use dogs on our ranch. We run cow-calf primarily, and we've switched over to raising Dorper sheep. We rotationally graze. Pretty often, especially the sheep, not the cattle, more free range, but the sheep, we control that grazing, and the dogs are a big part of that.
Okay, perfect. How long have you been working with stock dogs, and what breed do you work with?
We always had dogs around the ranch, but I didn't see my first really good dog until I was 19 years old. And once I seen what them dogs could actually do, we switched over. You know, we had, at that time, I mean, they were all crossbred dogs, what we had. And I seen my first good border collies, and that was the game changer. And so I really redirected my focus to dogs that would work like that, because until that point, all of our dogs were just drive dogs, you know, they'd push cattle out of the brush and stuff like that. And then they were saying that them border collies can go get them cattle and bring them back, and they were just so much more versatile than the dogs that we had. That was what made the change. Now, at that time, I mean, I had border collies and Kelpies. I even had cur dogs. I've tried about every breed of dog there is to work cattle, and in my opinion, the border collie far surpasses all other dogs, other than maybe the Kelpie. But Kelpies are still a lot harder to come by.
Yeah. I think a lot of folks that have taken up an interest in stock dogs for their operations, and a lot of folks that listen to this podcast are beginning operators or maybe coming into more of a managerial role if they're on a generational operation, and they've seen what some of those dogs can do. And when you see that for the first time, it's a real eye opener, you know, how much help and how much good help a good dog can be. So that's why a lot of folks, I think, are taking interest in it. It's like almost good enough to replace having a lot of extra help there. You know, it makes a big difference when you're trying to do something with cattle to have an animal that understands positioning and pressure points and all that, versus if you're shorthanded on people, it can really make your day go different.
Well, you know, and you see a lot of people go together and they just dread it. You know, it's going to be a headache and a hassle, and they have to get people, they have to find people to help. Where if you have two good dogs and your cattle are educated to a dog, gathering is very simple. Even with, you know, pairs or cow-calf pairs and babies, it's really easy. You can do it with one guy horseback or on a four-wheeler with a couple of dogs, and you don't have the big headache. You don't have your cows all stressed out. It just makes life real simple.
Absolutely. I'm located in Kansas, and dogs are not used nearly as commonly here, at least it took me a lot longer to find people that were interested in stock dogs here versus where you guys are. They're a lot more common. How big of a role does that play in like the type of cattle you run and having cattle that are exposed to dogs? And if you might decide to get a dog and use stock dogs on your operation?
Well, we buy a lot of broken mouth cows, and what we'll do is we got some little ma and pop pastures. And like my dad, he wasn't really for the dogs until he started seeing what them dogs could do. And then he got the bright idea to go get these little mom and pop pastures. And there's no corral, no nothing. And a lot of times we had to load them out at a very, not a very good place to load. And I could load them with them dogs. So he'd go buy them broken out, calf them out, and then when the grass was, out, the whole family went down. He really liked that because then all fall and winter, he didn't really have a lot going on. And he didn't have to have bulls. So we do quite a bit of that. If it wasn't for the dogs, that wouldn't be an option. You wouldn't be able to utilize them little pastures.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't really considered, how much of a change that could make for you in terms of utilizing ground that you have, or even maybe lack of equipment or infrastructure on that ground. If you don't have pens or loadouts there, that the dogs could potentially replace some of those things. That's a great point. For a lot of folks that are listening or maybe less exposed to stock dogs, what are some things that you think everybody should know about stock dogs, especially if they're considering getting into them? But even just in general, what do people not know that they should?
Well, number one, I think where a lot of people make a mistake is they go buy a puppy. And, a puppy is going to be a cheaper investment than a starter dog or a seasoned dog. But now you have to wait almost a full year for that puppy to get old enough to train. And where the dog doesn't know what it's doing, it's just going off its natural instinct. And the owner has no real experience working a dog. A lot of times it's a wreck. So my advice is if they do get a puppy, number one, watch that puppy's parents work and make sure that them dogs work like you want your dog to work. And number two, if go to, there's clinics all over the nation of showing people how to use their dogs and how to train their dogs. And I highly recommend finding a trainer in your area or one that you like and send your dog off for training. But before that dog comes home, go and spend 2-3 days with that trainer, learning to work that dog. And then the other big mistake is, people buy a dog and they take it home, and instead of taking time to get that dog to get used to your tone of voice, your mannerisms, let that dog get to know you, and take it home and work it. And the first day, it might go really good, but the second day, it goes real bad because they haven't allowed that dog time to learn their tone of voice. So even though they're giving the same command to the dog, it doesn't sound the same. So I think that's where a lot of people make a mistake, is buying puppies. And then the other thing is don't let that puppy just chase or chastise stock, because every time they go to stock, they're learning. And then now you have to try to break some bad habits. It's a lot easier to start a dog with a clean slate than one with a bunch of bad habits.
I'm so glad you could join us today. You can support the mission of the Farming on Purpose podcast and be part of the tribe dedicated to building ag legacies at farmingonpurpose.com/shop. You'll find apparel, office supplies, stickers, planners, and more, all inspired by the people living out ag legacies every day.
That makes a lot of sense. I think everybody kind of has to shift their mindset from, farm dogs or dogs that you have around more as pets where you want them as a puppy. This dog, a stock dog, is more of an employee or maybe more of like a ranch horse comparable than something that you want to have for their whole life. And I think that's a huge shift in mindset for people who are getting ready to get into stock dogs that haven't been around them before. How do you find folks to help you out with that journey? Obviously, if they're close to you, That's perfect for him. But how do folks go about finding somebody in their area to help get that training and advice that they need?
You know, social media has been a big game changer in the working in the stock dog world. You know, it's easier to find dogs and find training material. And for people that aren't on social media, I mean, you can Google stuff. I mean, Roy Cox has a set of training DVDs that are really good. And then there's a lot of stuff online now. But for people that aren't online, they can usually find someone if they go to like the Mountain State Stock Dog Association of the Southwest or even the NCA. They'll have a list of breeders and trainers and stuff like that so that you can find someone in your area or someone that works their dogs and uses their dogs in the manner that you want your dogs to work.
Got it. Yeah, the social media, I think, is a lot of what's opened people's eyes to stock dogs in the first place if they didn't grow up around them or weren't around them much before. When you see that, you definitely take an interest if you have cattle or livestock to wonder what's going on there. If folks are trying to evaluate if a stock dog is a good decision for their operation, what are some things they should think about in terms of a setup for the dogs or the dog, and in terms of, you know, is there going to be enough work for the dog?
You know, a dog is fairly easy once you understand them. You don't have to work them every day. You do need to stimulate them every day. And I mean, it could be just as easy as going with you to do chores or whatever. But with that dog, you don't want to just let it run loose. If it's not working or with you, it needs to be put up. I've seen several different kennel setups. My favorite are the raised kennels. They're a lot easier to clean. They got a platform in them that the dog get up there and lay. So when it's hot, you know, that's where they'll be. Or if it's cold, they got a good dog house where they can stay warm. But I really highly recommend the elevated kennels. Just it's cleaner for the dog. It's more comfortable for the dog. And then as far as stimulating that dog, like I said, you know, you don't have to work it every day. Now, you don't want it to be a pet and just lay around and leave it to its own, because they're going to, if they're not getting work, they're going to find something to do when you're not around. And then when you do go to work them, they're like, yeah, I don't like what you're doing. I'll just wait and come back later and do it myself.
So is there a certain, like, frequency that you should be aiming for to work them on stock, or just be working with them on training or keeping their skills sharp and building that bond with you? Or is there a certain number of head of livestock? What makes sense for folks who are just not really sure if a stock dog would help them or not?
I mean, if you have from 5 to 500, the number of stock doesn't really matter. As long as you have a good strong dog, the number of stock isn't such a big deal. The amount of time that you work that dog isn't such a big deal. As long as that dog is doing things how you want that dog to do them, and that's more important. Now, if you have a seasoned dog, I mean, you don't have to tune it up hardly ever. But if you have a started dog, then you're going to need some sort of training pin, and where you can go and correct how that dog's doing. I mean, a dog's really no different than a horse. You know, a 30-day horse and a 30-day dog are about the same. That are going to need more training, where a seasoned horse or seasoned dog, I mean, you can put them up and bring back out in 30 days, and it's like you rode them yesterday. And some are just a little harder headed, or, you know, not as seasoned, and you need to have them out way more often and keeping them sharp. I have for my training pins, I have a 16 by 16 and then a 50 by 50 square. And the reason I like square pins is because, I mean, you go to the feedlot and stuff like that, and there's never cattle in a round pin. They have to learn to dig them out of a corner. So I like to implement that right off. we started with the training. And if I need to sharpen that dog up or tune that dog up, we go back to those set pins. And just all training is habit created through repetition. So we go back and just reiterate what they've been taught, and it's fairly easy. For people looking to buy a dog, it really doesn't matter the number of head you have, but it's how you want your stock to act. Because once your stock are educated, I mean, it's very little work for that dog, and it's very easy on them cattle or sheep or goats or whatever you have. They understand it. You know, it's black and white. There's structure there. And when there's gray area, that's when things go wrong. And a lot of the time we're in the wrong place. We're putting too much pressure on them animals, and we create a bad situation. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen people load the trailer and all the pressure's right there at the mouth of the trailer, where if they just step back, give the animal a little time to think, they'd move off of that pressure. But when we get to putting too much pressure, instead of moving off of the pressure, they're trying to avoid that pressure.
That sounds very similar to what my husband tells me when I am trying to help him load things, you know, placements, everything. And it's something that I think some folks get very naturally and some folks don't, but it's something you can learn with practice. It takes some people a little longer than others. And I'm definitely, I think, one that takes a little longer or needs a little bit more practice at that. Is that something that it's helpful to maybe work on, like you said, with a professional, if you are less familiar with stock handling as well? Or is that just maybe you should figure that out before you get into stock dogs and not try to learn both at the same time?
You can learn a lot of stock handling for that dog if you'll just sit back and watch. And people, you know, people from ranches that work cattle all the time, and people that you know, ride, or whether they rope or any kind of competitive equine sport, really pick up the working the dog really fast, because a lot of it is similar to working a horse, you know, shoulder, rib, hip control, stuff like that. It all kind of relates to the dog. And so the them type of people pick it up really, really fast. The people that are new to cattle and new to, you know, sheep, goats, stuff like that, and don't really ride horses, they it takes them a little bit longer. But it like I said, if they'll just kind of watch that dog, they'll learn a ton. And I mean, them dogs know more about herding and stock than we ever will. And they're born knowing it. And most of the time when there's a wreck, it's because we got in the way somehow.
So a dog can potentially help you learn as well then. Sounds like.
A good trained dog can, yet.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, and that's why I was saying, don't, if you're new to stock and you're new to dogs, don't go get a dang puppy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let one of you be the professional.
Right,
exactly.
Got it. Well, you mentioned sheep and goats there, and something that's very common, folks might have a livestock guardian dog if they're running sheep or goats. Is that something that stock dogs handle well, or what kind of precautions or things do you need to be aware of if you're trying to do both, or maybe you already have a guardian dog on the property?
So I have guardian dogs, and they're with them sheep all the time. So if, like, the dog, when you introduce your stock dog to your guardian dog, don't just send your dog around the sheep or goats, because it's not going to work out well. But when they know that dog and they understand what's going on, them guardian dogs know the difference when that dog is a threat and when he's not. So as long as that dog, they know that dog, and he goes around, he moves them sheep or goat, and he's not biting them or doing anything stupid, they're fine with it. They understand it. And especially mine, because we move them so much. But if a strange dog comes, now that's a different story. So when you get your dog and you want to introduce him, you need to go out there with your dog and have him be around them guard dogs, and move them sheep or goat, you know, just quietly, and don't really have any specific place you're going. You're just getting them guard dogs used to that dog being there and moving them sheep or goat. And then pretty soon it's not a big deal because they understand it.
One thing that I have encountered or heard people talk about a lot with their stock dogs and challenging issue is the dog's confidence. Is that something that you run into as an issue a lot, or is that, you know, a genetic issue that they need to avoid? What kind of things can we do about that?
I hear this all the time. You need to build that dog's confidence, And here's the sad truth of it. I don't care what you do. You're not going to build the dog's confidence. They are what they were born with. Just like me. I'm 5'9". I'm never going to be an NBA basketball player, no matter how much I practice. It's just not going to happen. So some of them dogs just, they're bored with the herding instincts. They just don't have the guts to do what they need to do to be a cow dog. Now, they might be a sheep dog or a goat dog, but they'll never be a cow dog. And you hear people talk about how they, you know, are going to build their confidence. And that's the other reason I say don't get a puppy, because puppies can be a gamble. Go buy a dog that's already, you know, if you're wanting a cow dog, go buy one that's already worked cows and make sure that dog worked cows the way you'd like before you buy them. Because, you know, for people that say that they're, oh, you do this and they're going to build, you know, build the confidence, most of them people that say that want to sell you something.
So it's really more of a making sure you have the dog with the right demeanor and the right breeding to get the job done versus a training issue at that point.
Exactly. Yeah, because fear overcomes all training. You can't train past fear. So if they're afraid or they don't want to do it, you can't make them do it. And you're not going, but by working and training that dog, you're not going to boost its confidence. Now, people will tell you that you can do it, but watch how that dog works, because for cat, especially for cattle, you need a dog that will present himself. Give that cow the option to move off. Now, if she doesn't move off or she wants to challenge that dog needs to bite that cow. But the second she retreats, you need to leave her alone. And a lot of times them weaker dogs, they say you need to build confidence in. When that cow comes forward, that dog has got to move off. And then when that cow turns around, he'll run in there and bite her on the heel. Well, that wasn't fair to that cow. And that's how them cows become sour to dogs, because when that cow is taking the pressure off, that dog running there and cheek shot her. And I don't care for dogs that like that. And I think dogs like that put a bad name on stock dogs. And the whole confidence thing is, I don't care what you do. You're just applying a crutch. And once that crutch is taken away, you're stuck with the same weak dog you had to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like when you go, or if people are going to purchase a dog, watch that dog work on cattle and make sure that dog works in a manner that you are pleased with, so you don't get stuck with something that you don't like.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you have a pen set up where you can, you know, train or reinforce behavior and that kind of thing. But you also use your dogs to, you know, send them out to bring back cattle or sheep or goats. How confident do you need to be in your dog's abilities before you send them out like that in maybe a bigger area or to do a job like that?
You know, them dogs usually 30 days. You just need to, once you come out of them pens, you go to a little bit bigger pasture and you just reiterate working on that foundation. Everything we do in the small pen and the big pen outside is all the same. And this one really blows people away, but the more numbers, the bigger amount of stock that you put that dog on, the less likely they are to mess up, because, you know, they're herd animals and they're going to group together. It's a lot harder to bring 3 or 5 head than it is to say, let's say 50 head, because there's a lot less opportunity for that dog to mess up. And at distance, if that dog isn't doing it right up close, they're definitely not going to do it right at a distance. So if I'm having any trouble anywhere, we go back clear to that 16x16 pin and fix it, and then to the 40x40 and then back outside. So But a fetch is one of the easiest things that you can do with the border collie because that, I mean, they've been programmed to do it for, it's in their DNA. Now, if the dog doesn't understand moving stock or balance and it's in the, you know, a little tight inside of that flight zone and that stock starts to run, they're going to want to run around the front and stop it because they're afraid they're getting away. But you can watch, you can take a little puppy and put him in the pen and he'll push all them animals to one corner and then lay there and hold them. Well, he balanced that stock to that corner and you just got to teach him that he needs to bring that stock to you, to the handler. And once they understand that, the fetch is fairly easy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think that's a good way of looking at it. You know, you never want to have that experience where you send them out to do the fetch and it doesn't go well. And then it feels like you're taking it back to ground zero and you've potentially made day go real bad. But that's bound to happen with living animals every once in a while. Is there anything that folks should maybe remember or focus on when, if they do have that kind of a situation where things, they took them out to the next level or to a bigger area and something like that, and they kind of lost some of those basics when they do that?
Yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to go. Well, number one, don't be afraid to let that dog make mistakes, because By the dog making the mistake and then you correcting that mistake, that's how they learn. And let's say you send them 100 yards and they do it perfect. So you go to send them 200 yards and it's a wreck. Well, shorten it back up to, let's say, 125 yards, and you know, and slowly increase that distance. A thing that I see a lot of people do incorrectly is they try to send the dog too far too soon. And I like, when I'm lengthening them dogs out, I like to do it horseback, because then, you know, I can get there a lot faster because I'm not built for speed on that horse than I can a foot. And I can correct that behavior when it happens. So, and for people that, you know, can't do it a horseback, a four wheeler or side by side works just as good, I guess.
Okay, that's good to know. Just maybe not moving too fast. And then if you are making a bigger jump, to be able to have the means to be able to coach quickly or correct quickly versus trying to run out there and catch up.
Right. And when people go to look at a dog, let's say to purchase one, they want, when the handler sends that dog, they want to see him send that dog from their feet. Because if they have to walk out their ways in front of that dog, that dog doesn't really understand it quite yet, and they're using their self, their body pressure and their posture to kick that dog out around that stock. You want to be able to see that dog leave from that person's feet and go do it correctly. Because if they can't, when you buy the dog and you don't know that, and you try to send it from your feet and it goes bad, well, that's why that dog's not used to that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And then some of those things are things that a first time person maybe wouldn't know to look for. What are some of the other things that a first time dog buyer should be aware of or be watching for in that situation?
Type of stock that they're working on. I mean, if they got some wore out old training calves, the second they send that dog, them calves are coming. You know, they know the game. I mean, we trade cattle out here every 3-4 weeks just because they get dog broke. And I mean, they kind of lose some stuff with them that dog needs to know, because they know to go to the handler, and then you're going to take the pressure off of them. So try to look at that dog on some fresh stock. Now, it don't have to be pairs, but just some, you know, some fresh yearlings that don't just run to the handler. So make sure that they show that dog on some fresh cattle. And then another thing I would do is a lot of dogs look real good at home, but you take them somewhere and they don't look as good because they don't understand the routine and things have changed. So I like to see that dog out of his natural comfort zone, which, you know, that would be their place, or they work that dog all the time. I want to see him work somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And no, not everyone has that opportunity, but if you can get them out of their comfort zone and get them on some fresh cattle, it's going to show you pretty much what that dog's going to work like at your house.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I really appreciate you sharing this knowledge with folks who are considering taking this step. Is there situations or maybe setups that folks might have, if especially if they're a smaller operation, that just don't work well with dogs?
Not really. I mean, dogs come in very, very handy. I mean, I use a dog to graft lambs on because, you know, that ewe, she's worried about that dog and brings up the mother instinct and she'll take that lamb. And I mean, you might have to do it 2-3 times, but I haven't had one yet that hasn't taken a lamb when I do that. And I've tried everything, you know, putting Vicks in their nose and on the baby so they smell the same, and skinning the lamb out and putting the hide over it. I mean, it always seems like just a huge hassle. And then with that dog, you know, I got to go out there several times, but as soon as I take that dog out there, that he will stand there and that lamb goes to sucking. And about 3 days of that lamb, he's, you know, that milk went through his system. He smells like that ewe. She's used to it. She just takes him. So that's pretty handy for me. And smaller operations, usually a dog is a very big asset, because if they get, especially for people that live closer to town, you know, they got 5-10 goats or whatever, and they get out, I mean, you can put them back in with that dog really easy. So dogs benefit about every size operation you can speak of. It's just the people need to take the time to learn and utilize the dog.
Yeah. What are some other resources folks can get started with if they're not maybe ready to go to a clinic or something like that yet?
Go watch dog trials. Now, the arena trials, they don't really mimic ranch work, but you can see how broke that dog is, and, you know, how he takes commands and if he'll follow the handler's lead or not. And you know, there's no admission or anything. You just got to take the time and go watch. And you can find them trials on any of them websites, tell you when they are, where they're at, and just go watch. You know, and then you can see some dogs, you know, if you like that type of dog or if you don't. And it's a great place to, you know, see dogs moving livestock. Like I said, the arena trials aren't a real ranch or farm type setting, but it's more about, you know, how that dog handles pressure and releases pressure off of them cattle and takes command and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, we talked a lot about things from a beginner's perspective or a first time dog owner's perspective. From you, for somebody who's been in it for a long time and seen a lot of things, what are some of the biggest learning points that you've had along the way?
Number one, letting the dog make the choices and don't try to micromanage everything that dog does. I mean, us as human beings, we want to be in control, and we don't like when things are not in our control. And you have to learn to let that dog make choices and trust that dog that he knows what he's doing. And that, you know, that's easier said than done, because like I said, as human beings, we want to be in control. So that one was pretty hard for me to, you know, figure out, really, that I need to get out of that dog's way and let him actually work.
Yeah. I can see how that would be hard. It's like, especially when you're a beginning operator, there's a lot of things that are outside of your control. So having something you can control feels really good, but letting go of that is important.
It very. And I mean, you know, I watching old videos, I mean, I told that dog everywhere to be, what to do, when to do it. And now I don't talk to that dog near as much. I don't tell him what to do near as much. If we're educating some new cows to a dog, yeah, I'm pretty much involved and tell that dog where to be, when to be there. Now, if that cow comes forward and attacks that dog, he has every right to defend himself and bite her. I don't really tell him when to bite I let them figure that out for themselves. And they know when they need to bite and when they don't. But as far as sending a dog, once I send him, I really don't like to talk to him anymore. I want him to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy to do. I mean, you see it, it's happening, they're messing up, and you want to tell them and help them. But if you're always telling them and where to be, pretty soon they're waiting for you to tell them where to be rather than thinking for themselves and knowing where to be.
Mm. Yeah,
that's a great point. I coach a little kid's soccer team. My kids play soccer, and I could see, sounds like what I was doing last weekend as they were playing soccer, telling everybody, hey, get there, do this, do that. And sometimes you got to just let them figure it out for themselves and do their own thing.
And it's hard to do. I mean, even I've been doing it this long, and I mean, and I can see it in other people right away, and then I catch myself there, and I'm like, oh, dang it.
Yeah, that impulse of I know better, and I know where you need to be, and that's hard to let go of. But that's a great, great lesson to learn, it sounds like. What else have you encountered or learned along the way?
You know, just the, like the dogs that I had 20 years ago, I wouldn't have today. I mean, they're just, that's the beauty of dogs. I mean, you're always evolving and getting better, and then your dogs are getting better. And I mean, it's not just something that you pick up overnight, but when you do get it, it's well worth it. Like I said, if I didn't have dogs, there's no way in heck I'd own a sheep. I promise you that. And definitely not a goat.
Yeah, I can see that. As much as goats get out, dogs come in handy.
Oh, man. Like, if a fence will keep a sheep in, doesn't mean a dang thing to a goat. I promise you that.
The goats was what we first got started in. And I happened to be about, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 months pregnant at the time. And I was the one who was at home all day. So anytime that those goats would get out, it'd be me running around to try and get them back in. And I can tell you, when our dog, she's not a working dog, she's a farm dog, but she's got a little bit of instinct and ability to help. And when she figured out I wanted those goats to go back in and she started helping me, man, that was a life changer.
If it wasn't for dogs, I would not own sheep or goats. I promise you that.
Yeah.
So, like, when you were talking about little operations, I don't care if you own 5 goats, 50 goats, 500. Without a dog, I wouldn't own a goat or sheep.
Yeah. Well, that's really good insight. So I appreciate you kind of sharing your wisdom with folks and helping them think through that decision process of what might be helpful to them, where to get started. Is there anything else that I maybe didn't ask or didn't give you the opportunity to share about that you think folks in that position should maybe know or think about or be educating themselves on?
Education is most important. I mean, and really, really pay attention to who you learn from and make sure that their dogs work the way you want. Now, a lot of people can tell you how they should work, which is great, but don't really take that information to heart too much unless their dogs work like you want your dogs to work, if that makes sense. Because a lot of people understand it, yet their dogs don't really do how they say that they should do.
That kind of brings to mind a thought I didn't ask about, and that's when you make the jump from one dog helping you out to having multiple dogs or kind of growing and figuring out what that looks like for you. What do you need to know then, or when does it make sense to have more than one dog?
It's going to depend on numbers and how many days a week that dog works. And I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people think, oh, this old dog, you know, he sees him, he knows the job, I'll put this pup with him. Well, that's not how it works. Them dogs need to be able to do a job on their own before they're ever put with another dog to work. And here's why. Because independently broke dogs are going to do their job. They're not just going to follow the other dog. Where you put a pup with an older dog, he's just following that older dog around, not really doing his job. So it's pretty important to have them dogs individually broke so that they can do a job. And then it depends on the head and how number of head, how rough the stock is, stuff like that, how rough the terrain is, how many, you know, how much land they have to cover. Because people seem to forget that they're still animals and they're going to get tired, they're going to get sore, they're not just the robot. So there's several factors that a lot of jobs you can do with one dog. And then other jobs, I mean, let's say you only have 50 head together, but they're in three sections. I mean, you're going to want at least two dogs because that's a lot of ground to cover.
That makes sense. But when folks go to get additional dogs, should they shop the same as they did on their first dog, or do they look for different traits or alternative traits versus what they did originally?
Well, you know, once they get a dog, they'll find out what they like about that dog, what they don't like about that dog. And when they go to get a second dog, I'd want to see it work, you know, and then they're going to know more. So they'll be able to see stuff that they like or they don't like. And I'd go through the exact same process.
So if you have a dog that maybe there's some things that you don't like as much about how that dog works, but you're going to keep it, do you try to find a dog that maybe corrects for those or matches your dog, or is that something that really even makes much difference at that point?
Yeah, I would be looking for, you know, like if there are certain traits in a dog that you have that you don't like, when you buy another dog, don't buy one just like him. Look for a dog that doesn't have, you know, them faults or weaknesses, and they all have weaknesses and faults. I mean, they're like I said, they're a living being, so they're not going to be perfect. But you have to decide if you can deal with those. You know, if you can deal with those, or if it's not, because one person doesn't like that dog, someone else may. You know, that might be the best dog ever to them. But when you go buy your second dog, if there's things you don't like, make sure that next dog doesn't have them same faults.
Okay, got it. Good. Yeah, I think me thinking about that, I'd be like, well, I just have to, you know, maybe I'm stuck with that now. I have to get something that will work exactly the same so they can work together. But that's not necessarily the case. You can find a dog that maybe corrects for some of those, or it doesn't work quite the same.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, and just because they do it differently doesn't mean that they won't complement each other.
Yeah. Okay. Well, perfect. Well, thank you so much for answering our beginner level questions and sharing your insight. If folks want to learn more from you or find out more about what you do, where can they follow up with you at?
We have a website, statusdocdogs.com. We're on Facebook, Status Doc Dogs and Livestock LLC. We actually have a full training series on there for subscribers. We're on pretty much every social media platform. If they want to just call, they can get our phone number off of our website.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for being on today.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Lexi.
You bet.
If you've enjoyed spending time with us today, please take a moment to review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or join the conversation on social media. Do you have a topic you would like to discuss or know someone with a story to share? Apply to be a guest on the podcast at farmingonpurpose.com. You can follow the host of Farming on Purpose, Lexi, on your favorite social media platforms for more content by searching for Farming on Purpose. And remember, if you look around your table and aren't inspired by the people there, it's time to find a new seat.